Somebody did. I went trick-or-treating, dressed up as Andy Warhol.
Awesome.
And it didn't go very well because it scared my kids. I had this wig and I put it on, and then, no, they got really scared. So I'm going to tell you something today that is kind of neat. And it starts with something that's very, very basic. So hopefully we can sort of do everything from scratch. Hopefully all going to fit together at the end. So what I'll start talking about today is just differentiation. Right? Because after all, if we do something on the computer, then at some point we might actually want to do a numerical derivative. And at the end of the day, I'll hopefully show that I'm not going to spoil the surprise here. The first thing that we can write here is that the derivative of the function, well, what could I try to do? I could sort of look up in my high school textbook, and it would probably tell you something like this, where we estimate actually the derivative as the limit of this one. So what we can do here is that we can try to estimate what kind of error that's associated with this. Of course, when we do it on the computer, then we're going to have a fixed h here. So there's nothing wrong with your high school math book, right? This is the good definition of the derivative if you could take the limit where h goes to 0. So if I try to estimate the error by simply doing a Taylor expansion, then we know that f of x plus h, I can obtain that by a Taylor expansion around f of x. So it would be something like this. And then let's just, for good measure, include a few more terms here. Okay. So that means that if I then move things around here, then it means that f of x plus h here, then minus f of x, and then multiplied by 1 over h here, it indeed is something that starts with f prime. But then you can see that I then get plus here 1 over 2 factorial h then in f double prime of x here, and then plus 1 over 3 factorial h squared f 3 of x. So in this case, we would say, OK, well, that looks reasonable. But actually, the error here, that would be all these terms. And in my usual, perhaps a little bit sloppy notation, I would say that the error here, it's of the order of h, right? Because what really matters is this first term here. So of course, you probably know that we can try to do better, right? So let's try to do better. And after we've done better, we'll do even better. And after we've done even better, then I don't know what's after even better. So how do we do even better here? Well, we write what we have here. And then I say, well, I evaluate the function in x plus 8 here through this Taylor series. But what if I had evaluated in x minus h? Well, then I would get f of x here, and then minus h f prime of x, then plus 1/2 h squared f double prime of x, and then minus 1/3 h cubed f 3 of x. And then you can probably see that a familiar formula for the derivative, if you played around with numerical derivatives before, it's going to pop out if I just take the difference here. So if I look at f of x plus h minus f of x minus h here, and then I divide that with 2h, well, if I subtract these two equations, then the f of x term here is going to cancel out. Then I'm going to get my f prime of x term. And then I'm going to get actually 2/3 h cubed f 3 of x. And, well, the next term would be plus 2 over, sorry, these factorials. And then I should probably also, sorry, I got some factors wrong here. If I divide through with 2h, then it's going to cancel that, and I'm going to get an h squared here. And then I'm going to get 1 over 5, and then h4 f4 of x. Sorry, f5 of x, right? So I get all the odd derivatives with even powers in front of it. Okay. Now, this here, sometimes you would say that, well, I guess it's a question of taste, but sometimes I want to call this here a three-point formula. Maybe you want to call it a two-point formula, because I would evaluate the function in the two points adjacent to the point where I'm looking at. So this one, we would probably just call that a two-point formula. And you can see that when I look at this, then suddenly my error, if I do the numerical derivative like this, it went up by one order. And so that's quite a general feature. If you're looking at something like numerical derivatives, it's always better to use formulas that are symmetric around the point that you're looking at. And this year would certainly be one example of that. Have you all seen this one before? Right. So obviously, you can see that once we've done this, then let's do it one more time, right? So how would we do it one more time? Well, I would be looking here at x plus 2h, right? So it would be f of x here, and then 2h f prime of x here. And then I would have plus 2h squared over 2 factorial f double prime of x here, and then plus 2h to the power of 3 factorial f, sorry, this is 3 of x. So forth, right? Then, well, if this trick here worked once, why don't we try to do it once again? So I look at f of x minus 2h, and that's equal to f of x here, and then minus 2h f prime of x here, and then plus I have minus 2 h here over, well, 2 factorial if double prime of x here. And then actually I get minus 2 h to the power 3 over 3 factorial if 3 of x. So if I add these two like we did before, then what would I get? Actually, I'm going to subtract them, of course. I would get f of x minus 2h, right? Well, if I subtract them, then these terms are going to cancel, and I would get 4h f prime of x here. These terms would cancel, and then I actually get 2 over 3 factorial, 8h3 f 3 of x. And then I would get some higher order terms that I'm just going to lump together and say that they'll be starting with h5, right? Okay. So then I go over here. And then I say, well, if I look at this formula here, then you can see that that has an error term here, which is 1 over 3 factorial h squared f 3 of x. And if I actually do go ahead here and divide, so where did I actually have it? Okay, I guess I didn't write that out. So I can just take, I can take 8 times this formula here. Let's call it that. And substitute it in here to cancel that term, right? So if I do this, so I sort of take 8 times equation star, and I use it to cancel this term here. Then I end up with what I would call a 5.4. Oops. Wow. So then I get, I can get sort of an expression for the derivative here, which is 1 over 12 h f of x minus 2h. And then minus 8 f of x minus h here. And then plus 8 f of x plus h here. And then minus f of x plus 2h here. And that's it. And that will actually be, that should be OK to order h4. So the error term went up to h4 here. This here is now what I would call a 5-point formula, right? Because we sort of, we have x here and then 2 points on either side. Okay, so you can see here that by magic there appears some numbers in here which are probably not totally innocent. And you can see now that if you want to go beyond this 5-point formula, then you can probably get a guess at doing a 7-point formula. And after you've done the 7-point formula, then you can do the 9-point formula. So obviously, that becomes tiresome. So we want to do everything in one go. So let's see if we can't figure out how to do that. And it's something that in the literature has a couple of names, but I call it Richardson extrapolation. And In a few minutes, I'll be telling you about how we're going to do integration. And it turns out it's going to be precisely the same idea. So we had this derivative here, and it was in our three-point formula, 1 over 2 h here, and then this, and then minus the other part here, right? Then we had some error terms, and we saw that if I did it like this, you can see that the error terms are still written here. They're h2, h4, so it would be something like this. And probably this is going to continue to all orders, right? So what you should be saying to yourself is that from this piece of numerical mathematics, we know the functional form of the error terms. And whenever you know something, you should use it. So the form here, actually the functional form of the error term is known, right? So we're going to see if we can't figure out a way of doing sort of what we did here, but in a much more systematic way. So what we want to do is I want to introduce a little notation, and then I want to say that my f prime of x here, whatever I put here, I'm just going to put that and call it f phi of h here. And then I have my error terms here. And then something more, right? Okay, so we have this. So what we do is we look at first phi of h here. And that's going to be equal to then f prime here of x, and then basically minus these terms here. So minus a4, h4, minus a6, h6. But then what I do is that I evaluate that function in h over 2, right? So that's again going to give me f prime of x, but I'm going to get minus a2 here, and then h over 2 squared, and then minus a4, h over 2 to the power 4, and then minus a6, h over 6, to the power 6, and so forth. So all my series here, they of course continue. It's very, of course, very important here that my a here, even though it may depend on x and a lot of other interesting thing, it doesn't depend on h. Right. So this a2 here is obviously the same as this one. So then I do precisely what I did here, but in a slightly different way, right? So I want to cancel out this term here. But you can see in this case, I have a coefficient here, which is basically a quarter of what it is up here. So what I want to look at is perhaps phi of h here, and then minus 4 times phi of h over 2. If I do this, then I actually get that this here is equal to minus 3 f prime of x. And then I get then I get minus 3 over 4 here, a4, and then h to the power 4 here, and then I get minus a over, actually, minus 15 over 16a6, h6. So when we combine these, you can see that I can get a new estimate for if prime by simply dividing over with 3. So the conclusion here is that if I look at phi of h over 2 here, and then plus a third of, I'm just dividing through with minus 3, then I get phi of h over 2, and then minus phi of h. Well, that's then going to be some good estimate of what f prime of x here is, and then plus a quarter now, because I divided through with minus 3, and then a4, h4, and then plus 5 over 16, h6, and then probably times some high orders. Okay, but very importantly, you see that the what I did is that I combined this and that in the following manner to get a new approximation to f prime of x, where the error term, instead of being basically a power of 2 here, suddenly went up and I got a power of 4, right? So you might now see where this is going, because what we want to do is I want to generalize this. So I want to define something that I call D00. And that is simply phi of h. In other words, this line. Then I want to define something that I call D1 of 0. And that's phi of h over 2. And then d2 of 0 here, that would be phi of h over 2 to the power 2. And then if we think hard, then I can, you can probably guess that what we want to call dn 0, it's phi here evaluated in h, where the interval is cut, or h here is divided by a power of, well, divided by 2 to the power n. Okay. So what we want to do here is that I want to combine these two just as I did before, right? here, precisely. And I'm going to call that D11. And that would be this phi of h over 2 here, and then plus a third phi of h over 2, and then minus phi of h. But you can see if I had written out what the phi here of h over 4 would have been, then the coefficient here and in the line below would also have differed by a factor of 4, right? Because every time I go one line down here, my interval is just cut in half, right? So that would mean that I could combine this formula and that formula in precisely the same way. So that would give me what I would call D21. And it would be, let me see if I can write it out, it would be phi of h over 4 here, and then plus a third of phi of h over 4, and then minus phi of h over 2. And then you can probably see that this goes for every pair of lines, right? So I would do this again here, and then I would get something that I would call dn1, right? So once you've done this once, you say, well, this was easy, right? Because this first line here, that was very simple to, or this first column in the table that I'm building up, and you can probably look at the final shape of this. But this first column, that was very easy to get, and I could get to the next column just by pairing these two numbers, then these two numbers, and so forth, right? So, well, obviously what we want to do now is that I want to compare these two numbers and then cancel the next order. It turns out that that's not very hard to do. So let me look at the two last ones here. So I would have something where I would have dn minus 1, 1 here. Well, it would be equal to f prime of x here. And then we would basically have the formula that we had before. But I would have an h here over 2 to the n minus 2, and that to the power 4. And then plus 5 over 16 here, a 6, and then h over 2 to the n minus 2 to the power 6, and so forth. If I go down to the line below it, then I would have dn1. That would be my last entry here in the second column, and that would be f prime of x here. And, well, then we'd get a quarter here, a 4, and then h over 2n minus 1 to the power 4 plus 5 over 16, a 6, h over 2n minus 1 to the power 6. So obviously you can see that there's some mumbo-jumbo, and actually figuring out precisely what these numbers here, our coefficients, are going to come out to be, that involves a little bit of bookkeeping. But at the end of the day, the only thing we cared about was this transformation here. And what I'm looking for is the generalization of this here when I go and combine these two lines here. So you can see that what happened before, I multiplied with a factor of 4 here because I had a square there. Now I have a power of 4. So if I want to eliminate that term here, then you can see that we need to look at dn minus 1 here and then 1. And then I subtract off minus actually 4 squared here, and then dn in 1. And that will then give me something which is equal to minus, and before we had minus 3. What we're going to get now is we're going to get minus 4 squared minus 1 here, and then f prime of x. So 4 squared here is also known as 2 to the power 4, and that was just the generalization of the 2 to the power 2 we had before, right? So if I do this, then I'll have an error term there, which is actually going to start with 214 over 16 h over 2n minus 1 to the power 6. The only real thing that you're interested in is the fact that this one goes up to a power of 6. This coefficient doesn't really matter because it's going to be the same coefficient in the whole, actually now, third column, right? So I can now, with this, define what we call the second column, right? Because that would just be... dn1 here, and then plus 1 over 4 squared minus 1, and then dn1 here and minus dn minus 1, 1. Okay. So if I go over in my table, then... then it means that I can erase here, and then I can combine these two here, and I call that D22. And here I would be combining the last line here with the one right above it, and that would give us what we'd call DN2, right? And I just used this formula, and now what I would call proof by guesswork, you can see that this index here, this and that, they exactly match. So I'm not going to bother you with explicitly proving the formula for the third line, but the general case here, it's not going to be any different than saying yeah, so this we have to right, I hope you can see that this is very reasonable, right? If in doubt, then let's see if I actually wrote this right. Yes, I believe I did. So instead of so this now means that I can continue and I can sort of build a triangle. That if I start here with a column that has n entries in it, then I'll end up, and each time I go over to the next column, then I lose one entry, right? So it's not going to be a rectangle. It's going to be a little triangle, and the last one I can evaluate is dnn. But the wonder in this is, of course, that each time I step over in the next column, my error goes down by a power of 2. So if you work out here to order 8, then your power should probably be down to something like h to the power 16. And if you remember when we discussed these floating point numbers, we said that we couldn't really represent anything that was better than 2.2, 10 to the minus 16. So, well, you can try, but if you just built a little triangle here where you went out to maybe 15 by 15, then at some point things would stop make sense, right? Simply because we, well, if you like, we... exhausted the precision that we had if we are working with double precision. So I hope you appreciate that this is a very nice little trick. This is not a complicated formula. This is not complicated to do. And all we had to do is that I just looked at the form of the error term. And then I said, oh, well, if I know that functional form, I can systematically cancel these. There are equivalent formula. If you know that the error term is not just a sum of even powers, you can make it for a totally general power series. It just makes for more complicated bookkeeping. So this here, it can be generalized. And again, it's sort of your imagination that's going to limit you. And this here was the general formula. So let me just do so there's some theorems that goes with this. But basically, the theorems are just saying what I repeated before, that the error goes up by a power of 2 once you move one column over. So, well, let's look at the, so a little check here. So I want to look at the first one here. So I had f prime here of x, and I said it could be written as phi of h over 2 here, and then plus a third of phi of h over 2, and then minus phi of h, right? And then we can substitute in what this here might be. So I would say that this here should be 1 over h now, of f of x plus h over 2 minus f of x minus h over 2. That would be this term, and then I would have plus a third here. And then, well, I need to write it again, right? So it should be x plus h over 2, and then minus f of x minus h over 2. And this I probably need to divide by h, right? It'd be this term. And then nobody can read what I'm writing, so I can write anything I like here. So it would be 1 over 2h here, and then f of x plus h, and then minus f of x minus h. Right? I just substituted in our, so this here would be. This here would be what we call D11, right? Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to substitute whenever it says H, I'm going to write 2H. So what would I get then? Then I would get that F prime of X here is equal to 1 over 2H. F of x plus h minus f of x minus h, and then plus a third here. And what am I going to get here? I'm going to get f of x plus h minus f of x minus h. And then over 2h here. And then I subtract off minus 1 over 4h. And then f of x plus 2h minus f of x minus 2h. And then you can see that if I combine this, and I can't do that because I can't read myself what is written there. But trust me, if you do this little
algebra, then I get 1 over 12h here, and then I get 8f of x plus h here, minus 8f of x minus h here, and then plus f of x plus 2h here, and then minus f of x minus 2h. And this here, I claim, is actually good to order h4. Can you see this formula written anywhere else? Right? So it actually corresponds to this. So my first stab at doing these derivatives, where we sort of cumbersomely did this by hand, and I arrived here at a what I would call a five-point formula. You can see that that actually corresponds to the second column. So by this little magic formula, once I go out to the column past it, I go from a 5 to a 7 to a 9 to 11-point formulas, implicitly built in to this. And I don't have to work myself to death figuring out what they should be, right? So this is kind of neat. I challenge you to go and figure it out if the error terms here is an odd. Well, if you have a power here which is alpha, beta, gamma, then you can do the same thing. It just becomes real oddly. So I'll go. But I like this, right? Because if you look at your result for whatever you want to get, once you go one column out, you should basically get maybe a couple more digits in precision for hardly any work. So that was just the first derivative. Well, if we've done the first one, then we have to do the second derivatives. And again, we start as we did before. I write what my Taylor expansions are in a point around f of x. So I have the usual formula here. So I get 8 squared over 2 factorial f double prime of x here, and then plus h3, 3 factorial f3 of x. And maybe I want to include h4 here over 4 factorial f4 of x. So again, I go down, and then I look at what it is in f of x minus h. And it's precisely, things haven't changed. We haven't modified differentiation since 2 minutes ago. So we just get exactly the same expression. Okay, but what I'm going to do now is I'm after this term here. I want the second derivative. So what I want to do is I want to combine this one And then add f of x minus 8 to it. Okay? So if I do that, then you can see that, well, I would be stuck with a 2 f of x here. So why don't we move that over on the other side here? And then if I'm adding these together, then the 2 factorials here, they're just going to add up to be 1. So if I divide through here with 8 squared, then I would have my second derivative, and then I would have plus 2 over these here are going to cancel, so I would have 2 over 4 factorial, and it's just going to be 8 squared here, and then f4 of x. Okay. So this here is now something that we would really call a three-point formula. And again, you can see that it's symmetric around the point where we want to evaluate the derivative. So actually, you can see that the next term here that would come would probably be some h4. So what do we do? We know the functional form of the error terms. And I can just feed it into the Richardson extrapolation again. Right? So, again here, we can do Richardson. So maybe doing something like the second derivative here, it occurs all the time. I just wanted to say if we do the D11 here, so this I assume that you have seen many times, right? Because it sort of the lattice version of a second derivative, and then a lot of our second order differential equation that is so often occurring in physics, you've seen this represented before. But now that we know the little game that we're playing, it's easy to see that I can get the equivalent of this formula here simply by looking at D11 here, or just cooking ahead. So I just want to write it, and probably with a little experience, you could guess these. I can't, but maybe you can. So it's something like this. So I can, if you don't like this, then by all means go ahead and use this five-point formula. And I think I'm going to splurge and get a new piece of chalk. They can send me the bill if they like. So I have a five-point formula, and well, maybe if you're going to hardwire that into your programs, you can go ahead and do that. So if you start to pull out the other book that I recommended for the course, the one by Pang, then he'll tell you a little bit about this in chapter 3. This is actually equation 312. I claim that once you have this framework, you can just crank out any kind of formula that you like. And it should work. So, well, now you probably know more about differentiation than you actually wanted to know. So let's see if we can integrate. And so for the tutorial this afternoon, you're going to be doing simple integrals. And whenever, yes? Oh.
Why don't we just choose a very small h such that, like, once we're getting order h squared, if our first, you know, like, we can put that to such a small number already. Like, if we chose h to 10 to the minus 8, h squared is already 10 to the minus 16, which is way past double precision.
You can, for these formulas for differentiation, first of all, you could be limited in the point where you would actually know the function. you may not know it in the points where you want it. But you're right to a certain extent, and you can see this if you actually write programs, you would not go through this elaborate way of boosting your results. But I'm not done yet.
So this seems to relate to my question, which was, at the very beginning, you started with x plus h minus x minus h, which is, if h is small enough, this is just pure round-off error. So how do you decide how like, you want to make h smaller and smaller, like you said, but how do you decide
what round-off error is on you? So the, if you actually wanted to do this and numerically try to evaluate the limit where h goes to zero, you would have to be very careful, right? Because at some point you're going to be contaminated by round-off errors, and it's not going to make any more sense to decrease h. I'm just going to leave it up to you, because if you know about floating point representation and what your machine epsilon is, then you can probably try to control it. But that's typically not something that you would do. You try to keep an h here, which is small but not of order epsilon.
What's safe? Like, you know, is 2 times epsilon safe?
That's an easy question. What is safe is what will give the right result. And unfortunately, of course, that depends on the function, right? So, and typically what you'll see is that your test case where you're debugging, it works wonderfully well, but for your actual function, it has a nasty behavior right precisely where you want to look. And it could actually be that these tricks here will gonna come in handy. So far, I just want to then look at integration here. So if we have a function, and my functions, they always look very well behaved. So I start in the point A here, and I end in the point B. And then I want to somehow estimate what this integral here could be. Okay. So quite generally, what you're going to see is that there are two kinds of formula. There are the formulas where we consider the function that is being evaluated in points that are evenly spaced. So evenly spaced points. So xi here, it would be a and then plus h times I. Then in general, this integral here from a to b f of x here, dx, let's call it I, it's going to end up being some sum here from I equal 1 to maybe big N, where big N was how many points we bothered evaluating the function in. And then f of xi with some weights. So actually, you can see that if I look at this I have boiled down all integration here to determining what these weights might be. Let's see if we can So the first thing is what is called the trapezoidal rule. And it's very simple here. So if I have n points here, then I actually have n minus 1 intervals. So my h here, that would be b minus a, and then divided by n minus 1. Okay. So what we do here is that we look at one interval where I go from, let's say, xi to xi plus 1. And then the function might do something like this. But what we're going to do here is that we're just going to approximate that by a straight line and then figure out what the integral is in that case. And that just gives us fa plus fb over 2 times h. So that's the simplest possible formula that, well, I guess you could probably imagine something that would be simpler than this. If I do two intervals here, well, it might look something like this, where the function does that. Then I claim that I should get h here, as I did before. But then I just apply that formula twice. So maybe we have a, c, and b here, right? So I would get fa over 2, and then I get plus fc over 2. That was for the first interval. But lo and behold, then I again get another f of c over 2 from the second interval, and then plus fb over 2. So that's just h here, and then f of a over 2, and then plus f of c plus f of b over 2. Right? So that would mean that my integral from a to b here of f of x dx, well, I'm going to approximate it by some f of xi here, omega I here. But you can see that's going to be very simple because my weights are just going to be h over 2 for the first point, and then for all subsequent points, it'll be h until I reach the very last point, which again I'm going to evaluate like h over 2. Well, I'm, you know, the spacing here is always h, right? So I'm, you know, maybe I shouldn't call these a and b here. It's, I ran out of, you can call them xi and xi plus 1, and then this would be xi plus 2. So that would mean that we have our first set of weights here that are very useful. So I'm going to then look at the error term in this. Does anybody want to guess what the error term is? What would be the... So it can be shown here that the integral from a to b of f of x dx here, it is equal to f of a here over 2, and then times h, and then f of, well, let's call it x 2 here, f of x 2 up to f of x n minus 1 here, and then plus f of b over 2. In other words, this, and then plus a2 here, 8 squared, plus a4, h4, plus a6, h6, and so forth. What do you think we're going to do now? What? Yeah, so we, oh, by the way, I just want to mention that this looks innocently, but suppose you had a sum that was finite and you wanted to approximate that by an integral. I can use this formula here to go the other way, look at the error I would get by approximating the sum by an integral. And this here is actually a general formula of what's called the Euler-Maclaurin formula. And these coefficients here, you can, there's a lot of beautiful mathematical physics associated with this. They actually involve Bernoulli numbers and all kinds of funky stuff. So there's some underlying mathematics that I'm not going to go into, because all that we're interested in here is, of course, that the functional form here of the error term is known. And that means that we can do Richardson extrapolation. In this case, it is called Romberg integration, but it's again precisely the same thing. So let's have a look at what you would be doing here. So this is what we call Romberg integration, which is just what I would call Richardson extrapolation. Because the only thing that changes is that instead of having something that we would call a numerical derivative, we have an integral. So we could define what we would call R0, 0. And it would just be taking the entire interval and calling that our H here. Then we define R1 of 0. That's the integral from a to b cut in half here. So if I look at the number of intervals here, here I would have 2 to the 0. Here I would have 2 to the power 1. Then r2, 0. Then I, of course, divide each of these intervals in 2. So a to b here, and so forth. What we do now is I combine this with that, and I obtain R11. I combine this with that, I obtain R21. And nothing is going to change with our way of eliminating the error, because if you go back and look at what we did for Richardson extrapolation, the only thing we depended on was the fact that we had this even power series, right? So this here is same as before. So now it suddenly gets interesting, because I can start with doing a very simple trapezoidal integration, and then I can boost it. And then what you were saying before, why don't I just take the interval to be 10 to the minus 16? It wouldn't really apply, because if I take this interval to 10 to the minus 16, then it's going to be tough to evaluate. Yes?
And you can do this with discretely obtained data. I mean, like sampling data rather than...
That's what I was saying, that often you combine cases where you by hard work know the function at some point, but maybe you could get it by
hand.
Well,
I could only say that if you're integrating on sample data, it's fine, but differentiating sample data is a different kind of point, because integrating error versus differentiating error.
But I like to talk about Richardson extrapolation for the derivatives, just because it's so easy to understand, and we can all understand these formulas, and we can see the connection. If I derive Richardson extrapolation by looking at Romberg integration, it would sort of be obscuring what was going on. We can do this, and we're happy that we know the error term here, and we know that there's some underlying mathematics that is helping us here. So what do we want to do here? Well, maybe I want to look at how we would actually go about evaluating this one. So let's see if we, suppose we know R here, n minus 1 of 0. Can we calculate R n of 0? So of course you have this irresistible urge to write a little function that will just do the trapezoidal integration given that you specify n. But you can see when I'm calculating R 2 of 0, I would be evaluating the function in A and B and the midpoint, and well, that's precisely what I do up here as well. So when I go from R1, 0 here to R2, 0, I've actually done almost the entire calculation here, except for I need to add these two points. I don't need to calculate the whole thing. So what I claim and what I'm going to try to argue is that I can calculate this whole column here just with a little bit more work than it would take me to evaluate the last line, right? There's no reason to evaluate these independently. So what we do here is that we fix H here, and it's again B minus A here, and then I divide it by 2 to the power N. Then I have something that I call C here, which is just the exceptional points, which would be the two endpoints. Okay. So then I claim that our n of 0 here Well, it would be h, and then a sum from I equal 1 to 2n minus 1, and then f of a plus ih, and then I need to add c to it. You all agree on this, right? I have my endpoints, and I'm just summing them up, and then I separate out the two endpoints, right? So if I now look at our n minus 1 of 0, well, my stepping factor here, that should be twice what I had before. And I should have now a sum from j equal 1 to 2, but the power is not going to be n, it's going to be n minus 1, because I have half the number of points. And then I'm not going to include the last one, because I'm not going to do the n points. And then f of a here, and then plus 2jh, because my step is now 2h compared to this one. And then my c here is just going to be 2c, because h is twice what it is here, right? So what I want to argue now is that up here, I can use the fact that this is known. So if I, so what we want to write here is that our n of 0, it's equal to 1 half our n minus 1 of 0, and then plus our n of 0 minus 1 half our n minus 1 of 0, right? That seems okay to me, right? Because I just added and subtracted the same thing. Okay. So this year we assume, actually, let me go over here. And what I started to say, we assume that our n minus 1 here, that is known, right? So the only thing we need to determine is this one. So that's fairly easy. So our n 0 here, and then minus 1 half our n minus 1 of 0. My factors of c are going to cancel, so I would have h here, and then a sum from I equal 1 to 2n minus 1 f of a plus ih here, and then I would have minus h, and then a sum here, where I look from j equal 1 to 2n minus 1 minus 1 of f of a, and then plus 2jh. And of course, what you're going to see is that it'll just, this term will cancel every second term here, just as we would expect. So I get some h here, and then a sum from k equal 1 to, come on in, to 2n minus 1. And then f of a plus 2k minus 1 h. So basically, all the even values here of I are canceled. Okay, so that means that I can then just use this formula here. If I evaluate our n minus 1 here, then I can get our n 0 simply by adding this term to it. And that would mean that when I go along with my Romberg integration, then I would start here with R00, then R10, and then down to Rn0. And I would claim that I can evaluate entire column with, well, maybe just a little more work. So let's just say no, but with no more work than doing just Rn0 independently. And then I combine these, and I get R11, and then Rn1. And then I combine these again, and I would get R, for instance, R88, which is what you're asked to do in the tutorial. And then hopefully I can see that, hopefully you can now see that this becomes interesting because, well, if I didn't know about Romberg integration, maybe the best thing I would do is this one, but there's no guarantee that the error is going to be that small on this term. And then I just work my way out, and maybe I do eight columns, and I claim again, because we know this, it's not going to change from looking at the derivatives. Each time I work myself out with a column, I'm going to get probably one or two more digits, right? And this is actually going to, so hopefully you should be able to do some integrals basically to machine precision. It's sort of somewhat satisfactory that you can actually go and pull out Abramovitz and Stegen and look at some of the integrals that they evaluated and see if you get the same results. I'm hungry. I'm still hungry.
Can you sort of cheat and forget about C and just evaluate the F of A? Like naively from zero to?
No. There's actually, so what we're going to do is that we're going to do the whole string here. I'll show you tomorrow that you could see the trapezoidal was just putting a straight line. So the next thing you can do, you can say, well, if I don't do a straight line, suppose I assume that it's a second order polynomial, then you get Simpson. Then you do a third order polynomial and so forth. What you're going to end up seeing is that all the corrections are going to be show up in your weights as things that are different from one that are going to be marching in from the two ends. And you'll get weirder and weirder and staggered looking terms. So it looks very innocently that you shouldn't forget about that one.
Well, not forget, but just. Okay.
Well,
like
you know, I had this language teacher, and we would always ask him, can you say this? And he would always say, well, you know, it's a free country. You can say whatever you like. And, you know, it's a free country. If you want to drop that term, then do it. other questions? Well, you can try to estimate the error term that'll come from that. Other questions? Or so you see how you do this, right? Because you're going to be doing this for the tutorial this afternoon. It's kind of fun. It's a lot of not a lot of work. And certainly the underlying trapezoidal, I hope you can see that, well, you just sum the function in a number of points. And then the two endpoints you multiply by half. That's it, right?
Could you please comment from the book by Pan? What students need to read it, this book? Because no one has it.
Well, so part of what I've been talking about is not in there. There are two copies of the book by Tang out here. I checked that. Whenever we talk about computational physics, it's hard to define what it is. So I define computational physics like you would define condensed matter physics, basically by saying what it isn't. I wouldn't call this a course in numerical analysis because we have to know something about it, but it's not exactly the same thing. So once in a while, we'll be picking up sort of ends and bits and pieces like this. But if you really want to know about it, then you might be better off going and picking out a book, which is just called Numerical Analysis, and there's a lot of them around. Pang does parts of it, and if you want to read about his take on what I've done, then I believe it's basically chapters 2 and 3. I talked with John Belinsky about the book, and we're not gonna be using huge sections of it, and you could probably make do with other books. So what he told me that they were gonna do is that they were gonna scan it and then make some kind of PDF file available of the scan somewhere. I told him that this was totally legal, but he's a better man than me.
So, can you, for example, Xerox chapter for the homework?
I don't want to answer questions like this. I don't know what you guys can do at Primitive Institute. And I can tell you what I can do at McMaster. And so, okay. But you should be able to Romberg integration and these things here. You can probably find them in other books. Pang, we should have that available somehow, somewhere. So let's leave it at that. Okay. Other questions? Gonna go off. Oh, I should have switched off.